Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
We have invited three people to share their experience, strength, and hope on the topic of turning 21 in sobriety. Our panelists will be Christy from LA, Tessa from New York, and Ed from Jersey. And so please welcome Christy.
Tessa.
Please welcome Tessa.
You had it, Carlos.
Hi, I'm Tessa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tessa.
Okay, so I turned 21 in sobriety, and I guess that's what qualifies me to be up here. I don't know, I kind of feel like I cheated. I had 17 days when I turned 21, so I kind of squeaked in under the wire. But to the beginning of my story, I got drunk for the first time when I was 11. My mom and I were staying in a hotel, and they had Applemead brandy. And so she poured me, you know, a little taste, and when she went in the bathroom later on, I had hated the taste, but I liked the way it burned when it went down my throat. So I poured myself like half a glass, downed it really quickly before she came out of the bathroom, and later on that night, as the room kind of spun around me, I, for the first time in my life, felt okay in my skin, and I realized that this was a way that I could survive, because I wasn't comfortable in life from a very young age. And so then, you know, fast forward, I'm drinking with my friends, and you know, my drinking started off normal, quote unquote. You know, I would drink with my friends and nothing really bad happened. But the thing is that every time there was going to be drinking involved, I had to drink immediately. When we got there, it was, where's the alcohol? Give it to me as quickly as possible. And I don't want to wait. And when that one was gone, where's the next one? And none of my other friends were like that. You know, they would drink their beer and sip it and keep going. And, you know, honestly, if there wasn't going to be alcohol there, I wasn't really interested in hanging out with other people. And so that continued through high school. And the summer before I went away to college, I was introduced to some drugs. And my story went on a very quick downward spiral. Within 8 months, I had hit my bottom. I don't want to talk too much about drugs because I don't think you need to. It doesn't make you an alcoholic if you use drugs. Doesn't make you an alcoholic if you don't use drugs. But they are a part of my story. I was drinking and using drugs every day for 8 months. And what happened was I was lying. I isolated everybody out of my life. I was absolutely miserable. I wanted to kill myself. And by the end, I was locking myself alone in my dorm room and using drugs and drinking. And what happened was I got caught by my school. I was in college, and they had heard about my using, and they came and searched my room. And for the first time in a really long time, I had a moment of grace. And I just looked at them, and I said, I'm a drug addict. I need help. And still at that time, I couldn't admit that I had a problem with drinking. That would take another couple of months. They required that I went to rehab, and then I took a term off from school. And when they offered me rehabs to go do that the school would accept, I picked one that would still allow me to drink. It was, yes, a true alcoholic at heart. It was moderation-based, and for those of you who don't know, it's harm reduction. And, yes, there are those out there. And so I was like, this is great. I'll, you know, okay, fine, the drugs don't work. I'll put those down. I'll keep drinking. No one will be the wiser. And the rehab was fine with that. So, you know, I made my goals each week, and my goal was to drink, you know, 3 or 4 drinks, you know, 2 or 3 nights a week, and that was great. In reality, I was drinking almost every day, and it was more like 10 or 11. And, but, you know, I'd go in and have a smile on my face, be like, yeah, I met my goals. And I was absolutely miserable. That went on for about a month and a half. And one of my friends from the program ended up bringing me to an AA meeting. And the only reason why I went was for a couple of reasons. First of all, I had been counting days since I had been off drugs, and I had like 42 days, and he actually was in AA, but he was still in our rehab, and he had 56 days in AA, and he and I were worlds apart in terms of our mental clarity. He had what I wanted, and it intrigued me because I was absolutely miserable, you know, still drinking every day, wanting to die, and here he was showing up to rehab on time while I was strolling, you know, 10 minutes late, and he was happy. I don't know if it was just a pink cloud, but, you know, he was happy, and I wanted it. So I went with him to a meeting. I actually thought it was an NA meeting and almost ran out the door when I heard it was AA, but it already started, so I stayed. And what happened was I related to the speaker, and I realized that maybe I did have a problem with alcohol. And the other thing that caught my attention was that everybody there was happy. At least they were a lot happier than I was. And I figured that even if they were all just pretending to be happy, I couldn't even pretend to be happy. So maybe there was something there. And I started coming back. I got a sponsor. And when I had 12 days, it hit me that I was turning 21 in 5 more days. And what was I thinking? I hadn't really planned on getting sober, and certainly not before my 21st birthday. Didn't plan that well at all, but so what happened was at a meeting I took a Brain Desire and I announced I was turning 21 in 5 days, and I didn't know if I was going to make it. So my sponsor and one of her friends organized a birthday party for me, and my sponsor had me get a service position that night. And that's what saved my butt, was the fact that my sponsor and her friend cared enough about me, even though they barely knew me, to want to see me stay sober on through my 21st birthday. And my 21st birthday consisted of me going tanning on my friend's roof, who's in the program and is now one of my closest friends in sobriety, and going to rehab, going to a meeting, and then going out for dinner. Okay, sure, it's not the most perhaps ideal 21st birthday where you go and get drunk and end up throwing up in the toilet, but I had a lot more fun than I would have if I had been drinking. You know, my best friend had turned 21 a month before and almost had to go to the hospital for alcohol poisoning. And to be honest, sure, maybe that's the cool thing to do for your 21st birthday, but how much fun is that in the end? So, you know, and they embarrassed me in the restaurant, got me cake with candles, and, you know, had everyone sing. And to be honest, it was one of the best birthdays I've ever had because I was with people who truly cared about me. And even though, like I said before, they barely knew me, they wanted to help me and see me stay sober. And honestly, if it wasn't for that in the beginning of my sobriety, I don't know that I'd be up here today. I've only been sober for 14 months, but in those 14 months, a lot of my life has changed. I went back to the school that I almost got kicked out of, and I somehow made it to 9 a.m. classes when the year before I couldn't make it to 2 p.m. classes. I got a 3.6 GPA somehow. I got a summer internship. I'm going back in the fall in a couple of weeks. And, you know, that's all just the superficial stuff, though, that's changed. In reality, though, there's been a lot of other changes that have happened. I have a relationship with my family today. You know, my mom having her daughter in New York City and having no, you know, she wouldn't hear from me for weeks at a time and would call the RA on my floor and ask them to come and check and make sure I'm still alive. You know, I speak to her almost on a daily basis. And, you know, I have a relationship with my brother again. I'm starting to have a relationship with my father. I've reconnected with some old friends. And I've also made some amazing friends in the AA rooms. You know, I have friends that I can call and sob to on the phone when something goes wrong. I can call and rejoice with when something goes right. And, you know, the life that I have today, I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, when they say that you can have a life beyond your wildest dreams, they really do mean that. You know, even before my drinking and drugging got really out of hand, I would wake up in the morning and wish I was dead. I wish I hadn't woken up. You know, and today I can get out of bed, and most days I don't feel that way. You know, and the problem wasn't the drugs and the alcohol. The problem was is that I didn't have a solution for life, and I used drugs and alcohol as a solution. And that solution stopped working. And the only thing that has kept working for me thus far is a spiritual solution of going to meetings, having sponsees, calling my sponsor every day, being of service, you know, even if I'm not someone's sponsor, you know, someone who's new in the program, taking them to meetings, you know, I have a newcomer who stays with me on the weekends, you know, just opening up myself to helping others and reaching out my hands so that people who were, I was in that position where I needed people to reach out to me in the beginning, and that's what people did. You know, and so, yeah, your 21st birthday is a big one, but in the end, it's just another birthday. And is one day of drinking and drugging really worth the sobriety that you have right now? You know, and honestly, you can get sober and stay sober with 17 days on your 21st birthday. You know, by the time I had 17 days, I didn't want to start counting over again. and I certainly don't want to now. I mean, if as long as you just reach out to people and be honest about it, you know, that's one thing that I really had to learn was that it's okay for me to admit I'm terrified. You know, I'm scared that I'm going to drink because I'm going to be 21. That's nothing to be embarrassed about. You know, that's the drinking age. And even if someone got sober after they're 21, they can still understand how that could be a big deal. And don't be ashamed asked about it. So with that, I'm going to let the other speaker speak. Thank you.
And now, Christy from L.A.
I'm Christy. I'm an alcoholic.
Do I get, like, a warning? Because I can, I'll talk.
Awesome. Okay. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 21st, 2000. Turning 21 in sobriety. When I turned 21 in sobriety, text messaging did not exist. And Facebook, I had no idea why anybody would want to do Facebook. I didn't even know it existed. I don't think it existed yet. I don't think so at all. MySpace. I just discovered Instant Messenger when I got sober. So my point in telling that is that, like, you know, when you come in and the world of drinking, that's all you know, and then you come in, you get sober, for me to be told that my thinking was screwed up and a life beyond my wildest dreams, and to go like, yeah, I understand it intellectually, but until you experience it, it's really kind of awesome. You know, I had no idea, like, the young woman that I would become, and now I guess I'm a grown-ass woman now. I don't understand. I still feel like I'm young. But I was 20 when I came in, and not 17 days, but I turned 21 around like 2 months. My birthday is April 30th, and I was very aware of the fact that I was turning 21 when I came in. Tessa was talking about, you know, like ending up puking in the toilet and stuff. What had been happening to me and where I was at with my drinking was that at other people's 21st birthdays, they were carrying me home. And I remember like my best friend yelling at me while I was puking, being like, I'm the one that's supposed to be in the toilet, Christy. You know, and I'm like, oh, like, you know, like, and that, you know, I mean, it didn't really matter. I never like cared for the 21 rule anyway. So it's like, all of a sudden, you know, then you get sober and all of a sudden it's like a really big deal. And, you know, I had this sponsor in Miami and she talked about, she hadn't seen her kids 9 years. She had not seen her kids while she was out. She left her daughters with her abusive ex-husband and didn't give a shit. But the moment they threw her in rehab, she was like, I got to see my kids. I got to get out of here and see my kids, you know. And I get that kind of manipulation that, like, alcoholism wants to get out. And so, you know, like what Tessa said, like, it was very important for me to just sit in the rooms and obsess about turning 21, and people be very loving and tolerant with me. You know, it's pretty much all that I thought about and talked about. And at the same time, I was sure I was just a drug addict and not an alcoholic, which is how I kind of basically spent, like, my first couple months. I got sober in Boston. I was at Emerson College. You know, I mean, I could... tell you guys like a whole bunch of like drinking crazy wild stories. I probably have more war stories in sobriety than I did from drinking, from being sober. Nancy gets that. So, and, you know, just coming around the rooms and being sober for a while. But, you know, my life in Boston was pretty limited. I stuck to campus dorms, and then I moved like, you know, into apartment, you know, a couple blocks away. And when I got sober, my cell phone was a cellular one phone, and it had five numbers in it, and three of them were drug dealers, and the other one was a liquor store that I worked at, and one was my mom that I never called. That's where I was at when I got sober. And you know, I actually didn't drink very much in high school. I like sharing that honestly. Alcohol was very difficult for me to get. I could have probably put some more effort into it, but that was never one of my strong points, putting a lot of effort into things. And to be honest, you know, marijuana was a lot easier to get, and I thought it was marvelous. My mom didn't know whether I was stoned or not. I always had allergies, and it's just weird. It must be the cats. Let's get another one. We had two cats, and it was, you know, it was great. Because when I drank, actually, I needed to drink to get drunk. So I couldn't drink the way I wanted to. And I had a brother that was sober. He was a big cokehead. And as long as I didn't do that and I didn't have to go to those crazy rehabs he went to, he went to bottom-out rehabs. He went to rehabs where people got out of jail, and then they went there. And because my mom had to, like, scare him straight. And he got sober at 20 as well. But I kind of watched a lot of that, and I thought, well, as long as I don't do coke, then I'll be fine. And I drank probably like five times in high school. And I prided myself on it too. And that kind of like, I'll never do that. I'm not going to be like those people. And then I got to college and some idiot was like, I'll buy you alcohol every Friday. And I was like, you're my best friend. you know, just some nice guy helping out a college girl, you know, like we're pretty clueless. I think most girls, we come in the room and we think we know what's up and we really have no idea what's going on. He's such a nice guy and he's sober. it was fun being a young girl in sobriety. I was very grateful in Boston that they said this is AA and we talk about alcoholism, and I went to the other fellowship to talk about my drugs, and that's my story, you know, and that really helped me. I wanted to relate to drug addicts, people that met, you know, paged drug dealers. God help me, I'm old. I went to AA and I talked about drinking, and I took me a long time to get very honest about that. And when I moved back home to Miami, where I'm from, they did the same thing there. And we would say, you know, like alcohol and other stuff. And the reason why I'm very grateful about that is because, you know, today I'm very clear on what happens to me if I put a drink in my body. It's not all the same thing. Alcohol to me was a solution to my drug problem. I still kind of think of it as like, that's what normal people do. Yeah, that's what normal people do, but I don't do that way. When I drink to be horizontal, you know, and then if I can figure out how to puke it up, then I can go drink some more. You know, that's the way I drink. I drink really fast. I'm on my third beer. Everyone's on their first, you know, and I didn't know that this was like a problem. You know, everyone would be like, you just do everything so fast. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Where's another one, you know? And you know, when you're young to get alcohol, you know, it's like this like sweet, precious commodity, you know, it's like, you know, like get it in me as much as I can. That's how I drank. You know, when I figured out how to get drunk every day, I got a job at a liquor store, in Boston, you know, that was like brilliant to me. And then, you know, like I would steal, and I didn't even, at the time, if you had asked me, I didn't steal things. I'm not a thief, you know. But, like, I took, like, nips. I was entitled to those things, you know, because this job is so stressful, you know. And, like, it was, like, I worked at, like, what was basically, like, that movie Empire Records of a convenience store. I worked at Marlboro Market in Boston. And, you know, in Boston, you can't, I think it was that way. You can't buy liquor after 11 o'clock, or you can't buy any alcohol after 11 o'clock or on Sundays. And so Saturday night rush was like this insane thing where people would be running in. You know, I know normal people like to drink. They enjoy drinking, you know, whatever. And they, you know, they like run and they're like, oh man, I gotta get my beer and the football game's tomorrow. You know, like that's, you know, like I think that that's like a normal thing, but I'm an alcoholic. So for me, what happens is that when the employees go, hey, tonight was really stressful, let's take a shot of a nip. And I'm like, that's great. I now have to take that shot every single Saturday night. Everybody else is like, no, that's good. I don't need it tonight. And I'm like, really? Why? No one?
Well, I'm taking it because I have to. I don't know how to, like, function. Once I figured out, like, alcohol is fun, it's enjoyable, I can do it, and then it's like, now I have to maintain it. And once I took that shot, then I have to keep going. Then I have to take a bottle of wine home and go find my friends and go smoke blunts and all that crap. And no, I don't like doing ecstasy. Why is it in my mouth? And here I am, and it's 7 a.m., and it's like all this crap, you know. And I'm really just, you know, I think about, you know, being like 19 years old and a little short skirt and big old clunky Doc Martin boots and walking down Marlboro Street and just puking, you know, just throwing up by myself on those beautiful little brick sidewalks. And just laughing, just being like, I'm throwing up in a dress, you know, like, and like really thinking like, this is awesome, you know. And so I don't have a problem like with drinking. It's that whole other life stuff, you know. It's like, apparently I was in school at Emerson College, and that didn't work out so great. You know, I gave up on everything that I wanted to do. I left with big dreams to, you know, become an actress. And, you know, immediately when I found that everybody in my class did not drink or do drugs, I was alone in a very lone, like, cold place where I could not relate to anyone. And they all showed up to class and had their work done and were really great actors and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't know how to relate to any of them. They didn't drink. They didn't party. They didn't even smoke cigarettes. And I was like, what theater people are these people? Like, because I always thought, you know, artsy, crazy people. But these were like, they were actually serious about pursuing their dream. And they didn't need alcohol and drugs to, you know, get along. So I just dropped my major. That's really how that happened, you know. And I went and found people that did what I needed to do and figured out how to drink and do whatever else, you know, every day. And went to Holland. So I did have some experience of being able to drink. Emerson College has a program in Holland. I did get my grades up for that. I was able to get into that program. But I was able to drink like whenever I wanted and got a little window of that, you know, when I was 19 turning 20. And my 20th birthday was insane. My birthday, April 30th, is known as the Queen's Day in Amsterdam. And that is basically when they push tolerance to the limit. Like they celebrate their notion of like everything's legal. And so I had, at 20, I had that experience. And I remember there was no place to stay. I fell asleep next to a pile of dog shit. Like, you know, I just don't really remember it. You know, and I remember thinking like who gives a crap? You know, like I do this every day. Everything, and the way I drank on my 20th birthday, being able to drink and do drugs legally, like whatever I wanted, I did that every day. I remember thinking like, I gotta do this all over again next year, you know, because I'm turning 21 in the States. And there seemed to be like something really redundant and pointless. One thing I'm very grateful for in AA is calling out when I'm bullshitting, you know, just when things don't matter. And I'm putting emphasis on things that I think really, really matter, like what's really cool. You know, I did a lot of horrible things to myself, and I beat myself up over this word cool. When you're 19, 20, you know, just coming out of high school, that's very important. Whatever that definition of cool is and what you think cool is and what you think cool is. And I was able to kind of go in the rooms and realize, like, we all have different versions of what we think is cool, and we're obsessed with it, and yet, you know, we don't want to ever admit that. Because I suffer from self-obsession. I'm thinking about what you're thinking about me, and I'm, you know, if I like a guy, most of the time I'm just thinking if he's thinking about me. And, you know, it's like this, and I didn't know what that was. I just thought I was crazy. Then I walked into AA, and that's what they're talking about openly. And it's like, oh, these are my people. I was, because I remember, like, once I got, like, really fucked up, and I told a girlfriend of mine, I'm like, do you ever, like, think about what people are saying about you? She was like, no. And I was like, okay, I'll never talk about that again. So I basically, the story of me getting sober is pretty, like, awesome and amazing. That brother that I hated a lot who got sober at 20, he had 5 years. He did his 9-step amends, and I fessed up that I was getting kicked out of school, that I owed, you know, I was leaving the job at the liquor store because that's what was ruining my life. It was the fact that it was, you know, the millennium had just happened. this semester I'm going to get my shit together. But it was February. It was the third week of February, and I already was failing out of everything, and I had no money. And my family used to send me money. I was spoiled, and I was ungrateful. And I really just kind of wanted to be left alone and drink and do whatever I wanted. And that stuff had stopped working. When I say it stopped working, it was just that I didn't live life unless I was intoxicated. Even if I couldn't get anything, I popped like 4 or 5 DayQuil. The thought of living life without a substance in my body was not an option. It just couldn't happen. And if I was experiencing total sobriety, everyone was going to know about it. And I'm not doing this today, you know, like, and I had no willpower. It would be like, I'm going to quit for the weekends whatever it was. It was like then I would quit for the weekends. But anything, you know, like I did a very brief trial period of what it describes and more about alcoholism, and it was a royal fail. Because it just took one friend to go, why? And I'd be like, I don't know, you're right. And then I'd be off. And that's another thing about being young is that it always feels like it's going to happen later. Then I'll get my shit together. And I really knew deep down inside that I would never get my shit together. I had no idea actually how to do it, and I didn't want to tell anybody that. So when I got sober, I was actually terribly afraid of turning 21. It was a lot of I knew that I'd be a person that'd be going in and out of rehab. I just knew that's the life. I watched my brother go through that. I had already, before I even drank, I suffered from depression, and I was a cutter and stuff, and I knew what was waiting for me. And I just do not thrive in institutional situations. I just don't. I don't know who I am. I imitate everybody else. I can totally sweet talk and act innocent and behave like real Southern charm. And then, you know, it's just, I have no idea. And I can convince people that I'm getting better. I can almost even convince myself that I'm getting better. And so I was terrified to go back, because then I knew I just want to come out and it would get worse. I'd watch a lot of friends go into rehab and get worse, and so I thought that's what would happen to me. And so I basically went to my first AA meeting to not go to rehab. And I say that now, today, I still go to AA meetings so that I don't have to go to rehab. Because that option has not changed. If I pick up a drink today at 31 years old, odds are someone will throw my ass in rehab. Good luck trying to get me there. But you know, like, that's like, if I'm lucky, I'll make it back, you know? So approaching my 21st birthday, I mean, I was like on a real awesome pink cloud in Boston. I had only seen like one area of Boston when I got sober, around Emerson College. And when I got sober, like when I was using, I just saw one area. When I got sober, I saw more of Boston in the 90 days that I was sober than I saw in the 3 years that I lived there. I mean, I went everywhere to a meeting. You know, they were kicking me out of Emerson, and I said, fine. And then I didn't tell my mom I was getting sober, because I wasn't sure if I could actually make 90 days. And I just went to a meeting. Like, at Boston, you can't get to a meeting after like 8. There's no meetings like after 8 o'clock. So you better get them all in, you know, and find who the late night people are, because otherwise, if it's like 9 o'clock and you haven't gone to a meeting that day, you're just going to have to hold tight and go to a meeting like the next day. And you find God real quick. I don't know what it is. I would like listen to music to calm myself down. I listened to a lot of Tori Amos in the beginning, which was not good. And then I discovered like old 70s soul, like Marvin Gaye, and I love that stuff. You know, I was doing anything I could to stay sober. I was really nervous to run into people in Boston that I knew, because the moment I saw them, I would literally just run the other way. You know, like, I just, because I was nervous that if they said thank you, that if they said, you know, we're all going to go to so-and-so's house, I'd just find myself on that couch hanging out again, watching PlayStation for hours. And hours and days. But the story of my 21st birthday is actually really funny. You know, I was at this like wonderful pink cloud, and I was like, you know, like, I'm going to stay sober, and my birthday is not about that. You know, like, I was like, I'm going to go and meditate. And I had moved out to the North End, where no young people lived, in the North End. And I went by the water, and I sat by the water and wrote in a journal and listened to like new, nice, happy music. And I was like, I've been on this earth 21 years. Like, this is nice. I was like, real trippy, crazy stuff, you know? And my friend who got sober with me the same day her dad owned that liquor store that we worked at, she's no longer, sober. She drank after 5 years, but we're still friends because, you know, she's sick and I love her very much. But I remember we were going to go for my 21st birthday and keep it really simple. And we went to an Italian restaurant in the North End that night. Like, we went to a meeting, and then we went to the restaurant, and she told the waitress to bring me a tiramisu. And I had been very, like, relaxed all day. And, like, we ate, you know, whatever, and we were just catching up on how awesome it was to have, like, 45 days. And the waitress brings, like, the tiramisu, and, dude, the moment I bit into that thing, I was like, this has alcohol in it. And I was like, no, wait, let me check. Is it? Maybe it's just like the chocolate. It's really rich. And it got down, I'm going to be totally honest, it got down to like the last bite. And I looked at her and she looked at me because she was eating it too. And I was like, I think let's ask. And we asked and the waitress was like, oh yes, the bottom layer is soaked in Grand Marnier. And we were like, that whole cooked out thing? Oh, no. Oh, no, it wasn't cooked out. It was soaked in Grand Marnier. And that phone, because now that phone didn't have 5 numbers. That phone had, like, 40 numbers in it, you know? And I was just like, I just relapsed on tiramisu. I can't fucking. It's my 21st birthday. I'm going. I was like, I'm out. I am going. And, like, my brain just went, all that shit from, like, I'm on Earth. It was gone. It was like, I'm chugging. Let's go to the bar. Let's find Sailors. I remember saying that. I was like, fuck it! And I remember, God bless her, you know, she's not sober today, but God bless, she was there on that day. Debbie just looked at me and she goes, let's just go home and read the book. And I was like, okay. Let's just go home and read the book. And we did. We just went home, we read the big book of AA, and that was my 21st birthday, you know? And, like, I love that, you know, because you try to plan for, like, I'm going to be a spiritual awesome star, you know, like, and just sometimes shit just happens in life. I'll wrap it up with this, you know, I love being available and being able to offer that hilarious story that only, like, another alcoholic could understand, that mental twist that we have, you know, and I'll say, like, life is life, it's life on life's terms, you know, and it's sometimes it's amazing and sometimes it's gut-wrenching, and I'm very grateful that, you know, I've not found it necessary to pick up a drink, that if ever my brain is, I'm either having like a mental slip that I forget, like I have years in AA where I'm like, oh, eggnog sounds good, you know, like, and then I'm like, oh wait, that'd be crazy, like, that's insane, and I can get it without rum, or the times when it's like, I don't want to feel, you know, like usually when I want to drink, I also like want to cut myself and kill somebody and never like see anyone again. Like it's usually not like I want to be normal. You know, like I drink for effect, and the effect is to make me not feel myself. And you know, I've learned who I am. It's taken time, and you know, now what I like to say when I speak is like all the bad times, all the mistakes, all the painful things. You know, I wish that for you in sobriety, not because you should suffer those things. You just, that's life. Sometimes those things will happen. But I wish for that in sobriety because you can stay sober through them. You know, you don't need a drink. I don't give power to alcohol anymore, you know. And that's amazing. That's not the way it was when I came in. And, you know, getting sober young is a wonderful opportunity. And every day is a day that I could drink. The odds are against us staying sober. So I've never got this thing licked. It's always there. I'm never cured. And if you can remember that, then you remember how amazing it is to have any time sober. Because there was a life I was supposed to continue living. And I'm very, very grateful for the one that I have now. And so are my loved ones and my family. And, you know, and I love Icky Paw. I love all this crap. It's so amazing. And I don't know. I'll wrap it up. So thank you so much.
And finally, we have Ed from New Jersey.
How's it going, everybody? My name's Ed. I'm an alcoholic.
Eddie.
Hi, Ed.
How am I supposed to follow up that turning 21 story? That's awesome. It's really good to be here. I haven't been to a convention in a really long time. My last drink was July 13th, 2000. I just celebrated 10 years last month. I got sober when I was 17. Like you said, I think I probably hit more bottoms and have more war stories in sobriety than I did when I was drinking. You know, my drinking career was like anybody else's in here, you know, normal as far as I was concerned. But as far as everybody else was concerned, it was completely insane. Up until about a year or two ago, I was under the impression that my drinking career was probably like 6 years long. And my dad informed me that he'd probably been feeding me beer since I was like 4 or 5 years old when we'd have barbecues. So, you know, regardless of the fact that I am, you know, I realize this is a hereditary disease, my father's parenting didn't help out at all. But I, you know, the first drink that I can remember, and I know it wasn't actually like my first drink, I should say the first drunk that I can remember, was in Ridgewood, New Jersey. It's a suburb about 25 minutes from here. I was ditching class in, I think, like 8th grade. We went over to this other town, and we asked this guy to buy some cigarettes. And he was like, well, yeah, you want some malt liquor? And I was like, yeah, definitely. So he came out of the store with a bunch of Colt 45 and Old English. And this is also when I started listening to rap. You know, so I think I downed like two 40s, and I remember I was there with a couple of my friends, and I remember being on the corner by this liquor store that's still there, and there was this woman like walking her baby by me in a cart, and I puked all over the corner. And all my friends were running that way, and this lady was looking at me with this face of disgust, and I was just like, this is the happiest moment of my life. Like, I felt so good, and I was like, everybody likes me, but all my friends were running away, and I was like, everybody likes me, and this is amazing. And it was cool back then because, like, you could walk around the park in Ridgewood with a brown bag and a bottle, and, like, that became something I did every week. I was, like, you know, a homeless bum at the age of 11. And it was good at first, you know. People didn't keep drinking because they didn't have fun at first. I had a blast. But slowly it just became, like, this miserable, depressing life that everybody else here has experienced. You know, I'm not going to really get into the depths of my story. You know, I think I ended up at 4 or 5 rehabs. I've been arrested multiple times before I was, obviously I got sober when I was 17, so before I was even 18. You know, ruined the relationship I had with my family, ruined relationships I had with my friends, treated, you know, my high school girlfriend at the time like crap. And was just a miserable person, like robbed kids. I know, like, you know, I've been sober for 10 years. I've met people and then, you know, that aren't sober, and they're like, man, you seem like a really good guy, and I'll get to know him, and I'll tell him a little bit about my story, and they're like, you're joking, right? Like, you robbed people? And I remember when I first was getting sober, I would, like, I was really offended by that. I'm like, dude, I'm badass. Like, you don't know? You know? And I've come to take that as a huge compliment. It's crazy, the things that, when I think back at the stuff that I used to do, and this, you know, the person that I am now is just so black and white. Granted, you know, there was a lot of growing up to do in sobriety, and I have done my fair share of extremely dumb things sober. Managed to get arrested before in sobriety for paintballing some guy's car because he was being a jerk. You know, been in some horrible relationships that, you know, you'd think, wow, they must be like crazy drug addicts the way they're acting right now. But I was totally sober. You know, but it's all good, and today my life is awesome. I have, like, the most amazing friends in the world, and I honestly can say, like, none of this would be real if I hadn't stayed sober. I honestly didn't think I'd live past 21 to 25. That was, like, my range. And my birthday also happens to fall on January 1st, so birthdays were always insane for me. I really didn't think I'd make it past 21 because it was like, you know, New Year's hits, my birthday, give me your free drugs and alcohol, whatever. So it was nuts, but like I said, that first drink in Ridgewood, it was off running from there, and I think, yeah, by the time I was in 10th grade, I'd been to all these rehabs, things got really messed up, and what eventually happened was through probation and through the court system, they decided it'd be a good idea that I got sent to this long-term, therapeutic community in upstate New York called the Family Foundation School. I don't know if anybody's heard of it. And I got sent there, and it was, it sucked. I thought it was a boarding school. I was thinking lots of rich kids and cocaine. This is going to be awesome. And they sent me up there, and I walk up, and there's, like, this big statue of Joseph, and all the kids have their shirts tucked in. And I was like, what the hell is going on? You know, I you know, looked at some girls, smiled, they're like, and looked down and walked by, so I'm like, this sucks. They took away my rap CDs, they took away my baggy jeans, and they're like, yeah, you're going to be here for a minimum of 18 months. And at the time, I was 17 and a half. I had no plan on getting sober. Like I said, I'd been to a bunch of rehabs previously. I told my friends I'm going to work through a bunch of Hazleton packets, and I'll be out in a month. That's what I assumed was going to happen. I was like, you know, mail me letters with acid on the side of the letter. It'll be cool. You know, what happened is you take away the drugs and the alcohol, and I was completely miserable. I was like the worst dry drunk in the world. I remember that was probably the first time I cried in a long time. I was just like, you know, even my last drink was nothing monumental. The night before that, I think, you know, I drank like a six-pack of the Tall Boys of Steel Reserve, smoked a bunch of pot, and went over to my girlfriend's house. She's like, you know, let's have some fun, and I passed out. And woke up at 5:30 in the morning, and I know you can probably all relate to this feeling. Like, I woke up at 5:30, I'm walking down the street in my town for my mom to pick me up, and, like, birds are chirping, and people are going to work. And that was probably one of the first moments where I was like, this, something's just not right. You know, like, I'm 17 years old. I've been to these rehabs. Like, you know, my friend's parents that I used to, like, play soccer with and do, like, cool normal stuff are like, don't hang out with Ed. He's crazy. He's a bad influence. And I'm just like, something is not right. And whatever. So, I hop in the car. I end up at this rehab. And I'm completely miserable. And the cool thing about this place was, I want to say like 85% of the staff was actually in Alcoholics Anonymous. Actually went to meetings, worked a program, had sponsees out of there. And so I got hooked up with this guy who I think at the time had like 22, 23 years sober. And he actually didn't force anything on me, actually. I was extremely miserable. I talked to a couple kids. They seemed like they were laughing. They were smiling. I didn't understand that. I'm like, we don't have drugs. We don't have alcohol. We can't hook up with girls. We can't talk to our parents. We can't do anything. And they're like, well, dude, I found God. And, you know, I talked to my sponsor, and he took me through the steps. And I'm like, yeah, the Hazleton packets. No. They took me through the 12 and 12, and they took me through the Big Book. I didn't even know what the hell a Big Book was. So, and like, I'd been to all these rehabs. I think I went to one NA meeting. My dad didn't let me go back because I got some girl's number. You know, so I got so miserable that the first time in my life I decided I was going to ask somebody for help. And that was, like, the only time I ever asked somebody for help is if they had somebody that could get stuff cheaper from. You know, if there was somebody that could get me alcohol. Like, I asked those people for help. They had what I wanted, so I did what they said, you know. And so these kids were smiling. They had what I wanted. I didn't realize this was what was going on, but I'm just like, I'm so tired of sitting in my head and being miserable. And they're like, you know, give your, you know, talk to your sponsor in between class or whatever, and see if he's willing to help you out. And he did. He sat me down. And he took me through the 12 and 12. That's how I originally started the steps. I didn't go through the Big Book. And you know, this guy was pretty amazing. I didn't know if I trusted AA so much, as this guy was. He's like 6'4", 240 pounds. He told me his story. He was crazy as hell. He was like, you know, he blacked out for 2 weeks in Texas and woke up married in New York. He was insane. And he had what I wanted when I was drinking, too. That's the part that intrigued me. Like he was just a badass dude and, you know, commanded respect in the streets or whatever. And I thought I was from the I grew up in Ramsey, New Jersey. This is like a nice little town out there. We have, you know, listened to too much Wu-Tang and thought I'd start robbing people, you know. And but whatever, this guy was the real deal. And he had that, and then he was like, my life was miserable, and he got sober and was like the complete opposite, you know. Had like three kids, a happy wife who's also in sobriety, which is rare as far as I'm concerned. They're happily married, sober couple. You know, and he like went to church and, you know, wore a button-up shirt, and like he could still kick the crap out of the dude that's in the streets. You know, that is hardcore. So I was just like, this guy kind of has what I want. I'm gonna do whatever the hell he says. And that's what I did, man. He made me read the first step probably like four or five times. I always understood the unmanageability part. I'm like, yeah, clearly my life was totally screwed up, but I didn't understand being powerless over a substance. Just like, no, dude, I wanted to drink. I love drinking. It feels great. And it seems stupid, but he was like, have you ever had food poisoning? And I was like, yeah, I got, I ate scallops when I was like 7 years old. And I got sick for like 8 hours. I was just puking. I didn't eat scallops for another 11 or 12 years. And to this day, I don't really like them that much. But like you were saying, whenever I would drink, like I would be looking forward to that moment when I could puke so I could keep drinking. And that was like my favorite part. My friends were like, dude, you're so gross. And I was just like looking for a toilet or a bathroom or go outside, puke in the bushes, just so I'd go back in and start pounding. And that was like probably one of my most favorite parts of the night because it brought me back down to that level that was normal. And he's like, yeah, that's totally not normal. and that made sense. Like, I feel like I've always worked on logic, you know. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty logical. That doesn't make any sense at all. And, you know, and then I also had the whole issue with God or whatever. I was like, I called myself an agnostic. I think I just liked arguing with people when I was drunk about if God was real. You know, but the cool part was, like I said, I for whatever reason, this guy had what I wanted. I looked up to him. I respected him. So to a certain extent, he became somewhat of a higher power. And I didn't necessarily trust AA, but he did. So I'm like, I'm going to trust AA. And then it's like everybody in AA talked about having a higher power. And, you know, I don't know anything about that, but if I trust him and he trusts AA, so I, by default, trust AA, and they trust in a higher power, I kind of, by default, got to try this out. And that's what I started doing. Every night, I was like, you know, what should I do? He's like, oh, pray. I felt stupid asking him what to pray about, so I think I prayed for my friends and my family. I was like, God, I don't know if you're real. I don't know, you know, what I should be praying about, but, you know, these people are pretty cool. I hope you can take care of them. And I did that for, like, 6 months, and I just did what people said, and he took me through the steps, and I don't want to get into the intricacies of my fourth step and telling him everything and going through the rest of the stuff, but it was just an amazing experience and changed who I was at the core. I ended up staying at that school. At the time, like I said, I was 17 and a half when I got sent there. I was planning on leaving when I was 18, regardless of the fact that I was on probation and it would have been a big violation. I probably would have went to jail or whatever. You know, I decided when I turned 18, I'm like, screw it, I'm just going to finish something for the first time in my life. I remember when I was there about 4 or 5 months, I woke up one day, I was like, I don't really want to drink today. And that was just kind of shocking to me, because every day I'd kind of wake up and be like, man, it sucks that I'm here, I wish I could drink. And I'm like, I don't really want to, I'm happy, life is good. And some of my happiest times in sobriety were at this lame-ass therapeutic community in upstate New York with, like, cows across the way. And it really was, I had some of my best times there. So like I said, I ended up staying there for, 2 weeks short of 2 years. I ended up leaving there with 2 years sober, right before, I guess, I turned 19 years old. And, which was kind of like a whole other culture shock. Once again, you know, going into that school, it was like a whole different type of lifestyle. Coming back out, you know, I was a little bit scared. I didn't know, what to expect. I remember talking to my sponsor. His name was Tom. I was like, Tom, you know, what should I do every day to stay sober? And he's like, my sponsor told me to do 5 things. You know, when you wake up in the morning, hit your knees and ask God to keep you sober for the next 24. Go to a meeting, call your sponsor, you know, read a meditation, and at night hit your knees and thank God for keeping you sober for the last 24 hours. And, you know, I got to be honest, I don't do that every single day now. But I definitely did for like the first 3 years when I left. Every single day I did all those things. And if I didn't make a meeting, you know, I think I probably did a meeting every day for quite a while. I was still, you know, up until I had 6 years sober, I was probably hitting 3 or 4 meetings a week. And I got out of there and I did what people said. I picked up commitments. I did all these other things that I suggest, you know, new people in recovery do. I went to a lot of these conventions, drank way too much Red Bull, you know, stayed up all night, did crazy stuff. And it was a really good time. So if anybody hasn't been to a convention here, they're awesome. Embrace it. Meet cool people. Get numbers. Go to conventions other places. I was just waiting for – I've never been to an Icky Paw. I remember coming to these I remember coming to these conventions and thinking, you know, coming and seeing the speakers. I'm like, I wonder if I'll stick around long enough to be one of them. So this is kind of crazy. It's like the big leagues, you know. But – No, you know, so my 21st birthday in sobriety actually was at a convention. 5 minutes, sorry. I believe it was in Rhode Island. And it was, you know, like you guys said, it was actually one of my best birthdays. As lame as that is, you know, I was just, we were at this convention in Rhode Island, and everybody was just being a nut, drinking way too much Red Bull. I think we went out to a some, you know, Applebee's or some lame restaurant like that. And being that my birthday is always on the first, nobody ever remembers my birthday until I remind them. But my friends actually remembered, and they got me like a little cake and crap, and I felt very special. It made me happy. Drinking was never really an issue as far as turning 21. I was lucky enough to have, at the time, I guess, 4 years sober. And I remember thinking, you know, whatever, like, I can get charged as an adult if I drink now. It was nice before I was 17. I was still a minor. And honestly, by the time I had 4 years, and granted, I know a lot of people who've had, you know, decades, and they went out drinking, and I'm not immune to having those thoughts, thinking like, oh man, I'd love to be regular. I'm, you know, over my friend's place, and we're on his boat, and his dad's having a beer with his son. I'm like, oh, that'd be so normal. You know, that's like you guys all know, that's not how we drink. You know, I would have fallen off the boat and drowned within 2 hours. So, you know, so it really wasn't an issue, and it's really just kind of become a lifestyle, a way of living at this point. And, you know, even in the last few years, I slowed down going to meetings so much, and only in the last 6 months to a year have I started getting back to hopefully 2 or 3 meetings a week. But even in that time, the one thing, and I'll just leave you off with this, the one thing that has just become core to my sobriety, core to my living, core to my happiness has been fellowship. Steps are extremely important. Meetings are extremely important. Picking up commitment, service, all that stuff is extremely important. But having people in my life who have what I want and I respect has been extremely important to me just becoming a better human being on a daily basis. So even in those times where I wasn't necessarily going to a lot of meetings, you know, I had people with more time than me who I was talking to on the phone on a daily basis. And it's made me a better person. So I'm glad you guys are all here, and thanks for letting me speak.
I would like to thank our panelists for their service to IKIPA. We have time permitting for some general sharing for the floor, from the floor. Would anyone like to share for 2 to 3 minutes? All right. You come up here and talking to the microphone.
I'm Michelle. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Michelle.
I'm from... Sorry?
The wire's short. You have to lean in.
Just lean. All right. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Whoever's supposed to hear me will hear me. Okay. I'm from Canada, so the legal drinking age in Canada is 19. And yesterday, the first day of the conference, I just got really nervous, was my 19th birthday. So I... Thank you. I've been sober for about 20 months, and for some reason I was like, oh my God, I'm 19. I'm going to drink. Like, it was just, and I totally identified with you with just the, you're either looking for a way in or a way out. And I had no problems at all. Like, I'm very content in my sobriety, and I don't think about drinking at all. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute. I can legally do all those horrible things that I was doing. And it just seemed like such a great idea, and it was just really, I don't know why I thought I should share that, but I just really identified with you, and I didn't think I was going to identify with you at all, because I was like, oh, he's a male speaker, I'll go to a different meeting. And so, and I totally identified with you, and I like, and hardcore is my favorite word, so I'm really happy that you said that, and I thought I was so badass, and I don't know, I should just thank you guys after. So, thanks, sorry.
Happy birthday.
Would anybody else? All right.
Name is Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Joe.
The drinking age was 18 when I was drinking, and then they changed it to 21, and so I was grandfathered in. When I was thinking what she said, when I started drinking or at age 21, they didn't have cell phones, and we had I had a record player. Played music in high school. So I got sober at 19 years old, and that was back in 1982, and I've been sober since, and now I'm an old man, I'm 47. So I've been sober for a while. Fantastic stories for the people, I appreciate that. IKIPAs are just amazing. I was on, in 84, I was 20 years old. I was on the host committee for Colorado Ikipa, and I got involved with these young people. They were just doing crazy stuff. Just, you know, they were having softball tournaments and going to the, you know, canoe trips and just crazy stuff in sobriety. We got kicked out of a diner sober because we were playing sober catch-up football, and we fumbled the ball. So, you know, I can relate. Thank you very much.
In the back.
Hey guys, I'm Corey, drug addict, alcoholic.
Hi, Corey.
From Hartford, Connecticut. Originally, actually, Amherst, Massachusetts, but I had to move to Hartford to Connecticut to get sober. You know, I couldn't do it. I went to my first meeting when I was 17 in a psych hospital in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and I mean, I really related to what you said, you know, directly. I wasn't going to a meeting to not go to rehab because I didn't even think about rehab yet. I was just kind of trying to please other people by, you know, getting sober so I could, you know, for other people. In Amherst, I, you know, tried for 4 years. But, you know, and then now I go to meetings, so I, you know, stay out of rehab. You know, I ended up going to rehab in upstate Connecticut, which is why I live in Connecticut now, and then getting out 4 days before my 21st birthday and moving into a sober house and in Connecticut. I was going to be like, oh, I can go back home and manipulate things and be like, oh, you know, I could go back to school or something, but, like, that's crazy talk. Anyways, you know, it's great to be here. I love the fellowship, all the young people. It's like, you know, even though in the Hartford area there are young people, you know, you go to a meeting, you see 12 people under 30. You know, here it's like you see like 1,200 people under 30. So, you know, it's great to be here. Thank you so much.
We have time for one really quick share.
Hi, I'm Victoria. I'm an alcoholic. You guys are amazing. You really are. I actually remember I came in here and I was like, I didn't really know any young people. And look at this. There's so many people here and it's absolutely amazing. And I wanted to say that we were just so lucky. We were given such a gift that we get to live the rest of our lives sober. And, you know, if I had heard that when I walked into these rooms, I would have been like, what the hell? Because I remember there was this one woman, and she was like, you know, my life's not a big party today, and that's okay. I'm like, that's not okay. I'm like, no way. I mean, I came in here, and I was in a sorority, and I was a social chair, and I had to live in a sorority house my first couple of months sober. It was very difficult. But you know what, I remember I was anticipating that 21st birthday and I was coming up on it. I would think I was about like 8 months sober. And, you know what, I had such a good birthday, even though I had like 3 midterms that week. You know, I woke up in the morning, I got up at like a meeting at 9 o'clock, and this meeting that I've never gone to, they heard it was my birthday that week and they got me a cake, and it was so wonderful. And, you know, like you can have these things, like you can go with society and think that your 21st birthday is supposed to be this crazy, like, you know, drinking fiesta, but it's really like, you know, you're 21. Like, that's all it is. It's just another year has gone by. And we, you know, we learn in AA that it's day by day, and that's just another day, you know, just a special day. But that's it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.